I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We don't go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers, episode 16. This week we're all back on the same side of the Atlantic and on the same time zone after last week's transatlantic fare. So as ever, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Ross Bell, who has spent the last few days looking to buy one of those snazzy jumpers Chris Collinsworth had on Sunday, and the man who was effectively a Hall of Famer's personal cook 10 days ago, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
Welcome home, guys. Welcome home.
Well, thanks. As I said, when do we get to go back? Before we get into all the fun from Sunday, the debut of a badly named new feature and some true and false, I want a preview of the Week 11 game versus the Eagles. We have some notes to get through. Firstly, a few personal and pod ones. As you may have heard or saw, me and Adam spent the last week in the motherland of Seattle. It was an all-timer of a week. And just a few thanks to send to Bill, Cindy, and the whole White family and their friends that we met over there. Mike, Tina, Sean, Mark, Claire, Will, Duncan, Emma, Lester, the Fire Hat guy, all the Chrises, Neil, Terry, Cedric, Matty, Shannon, Mary, and any other UK or US Seahawker I may have crossed paths with over that weekend. Making it the trip of all trips. Then, of course, there is Brandon and Adam from the Seahawkers podcast who kindly got their recording equipment hastily in order after the Bills game and had myself and Adam on. It was fun to chat, and a C-Mic premonition was in the mix too. Also to Chris Johnson for not only coming on the podcast last week to talk some Hawks, but helping set up and joined us on a very cool tour of the facility on the shores of Lake Washington. Why the chapter angle? Thanks to Thomas Buren and the guys at VMAC for not only taking the 12th flag everyone, including Marshawn and Walter Jones, signed, but for winding it up the mast on Veterans Day in the US and having it fly over the facility. Very cool and very much appreciated from this side of the Atlantic. But as you put, Adam, when do we get to go back, eh?
Oh, not soon enough. I don't think I can wangle a playoff trip. I think someone will have my nuts for garters if I do that. Wouldn't be great, nuts or guts. I don't know what the phrase is, but either of them sounds particularly painful. So yeah, I guess roll on next season.
Yeah, most definitely. It was an absolutely unbelievable 7 days, seven days. Just yeah. But now on to some VMAC notes. What was a quiet week exploded on Tuesday night as the team made some moves on the roster. Leading rusher Christian Michael was cut, much to the surprise of anyone who hasn't listened to me and Adam on any platform for the past few weeks. Michael has seen his playing time and coach's trust dwindle to a nothingness by this weekend as CJ Proso surpassed him as the lead back and did rather well that opportunity. Pre-season favourite Troy Maine-Pope was signed to replace Christian Michael off the practice squad, and I'm sure expectations of him will be well reasoned. Elsewhere, the team also cut defensive tackle Sielva Sliga and signed former Saint defensive tackle Jonathan Jenkins to his spot. Jenkins was a third rounder in 2013 for the Saints and is a huge human at 360 pounds and 6'3" and adds that big body presence and immovable object to the depth behind Messrs. Reed and Rubin. Sliga was claimed by the Bucs yesterday. Lastly, the practice squad was put back up to 10 again with wide receiver Kenny Lawler, our boy on this pod, taking Pope's spot. But as for Christian Michael, it's been coming, hasn't it? Pete saying yesterday they went with the guys they wanted to go with when asked for reasoning on releasing the running back. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all sort of got a bit carried away with him at the start, me especially. I think I rather stupidly named him in my top 10 running backs in the league, which is probably ever so slightly hasty. And I think since week four, he's about 3.2 yards a carry. And people can say, oh yeah, but what if he gets injured? What if he gets injured? If anyone does get injured, 3.2 yards per carry isn't going to win us any playoff games anyway. So I think we're at the stage now where he's just a guy. Good luck to him in Green Bay. We appreciated the work that he did, but really, he's just not good enough to play for a team like us.
No, I'd agree with that. He the way I saw it was that if without Tristan Mark at the start of the season, when Rawls was injured and re-injured and everything, that the running game would have been embarrassing. It wasn't great, but it would have been even worse without him. So thank and shake his hand, not literally obviously, for doing that, but he clearly wasn't good enough. He clearly had done some things to rub decision makers the wrong way or something. But yeah, I wasn't that surprised when the news came down on Tuesday. Ross?
Yeah, it's, it wasn't a massive surprise. But how many other teams would go ahead at this stage of the season and cut a guy who's got six touchdowns and almost 500 yards? There's not many teams that have the confidence in their other players to just go ahead and do that.
No, there's not. But also, as Carroll said yesterday, all three guys now, or four guys if you include Alex Collins, you've got Rawls coming back, Prosize obviously, Pope and Collins, all four of them can do and bring something different to the table. Christian Michael could do some of what they could do, but not to the effectiveness that they obviously quite clearly see and hope.
Can we not include Alex Collins in any discussions?
Over three, four can do. But he's on the roster, so I've got to include him.
Somehow.
For this week, at least.
He's gone the moment Mike Morgan is back healthy. We all know that.
One carry, one fumble. Luckily, he landed on the top of it.
Yeah, one carry, 1 yard, one fumble recovery. I mean, that's a solid, that's a better fantasy day than Michael Thomas had for me last week. So
true, yeah. Minus 5 points for me.
Yeah, minus two, I think 2.5, and I lost by 8, I think I lost by. Right, but now on to this past week's game and the primetime classic versus the Patriots in their own backyard. Very little confidence was present from some, myself included, as it appeared set to be, as Adam put it, a complete hosing by a maniacally efficient offence in New England and Tom Brady. It wasn't altered as they stormed down the field with little resistance for an early 7-0 lead. But then Russell Wilson got to work and shredded time after time on his way to a stat line which read 25 for 37, 348 yards and 3 touchdowns, all 3 going to Doug Baldwin. On the defensive side, bar 2 drives, they hit hard and got to Brady with slight regularity. Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas joined up to bust the chest inwards of Rob Gronkowski, but it came down, as seems to be par for the course now with this lot, down to a play on the 1 yard line. Our mate, Steve Rabel, will lead you the rest of the way.
Gronk goes to the far side, he's got Chancellor on him, Brady. He's going to throw the ball up for Gronkowski, who pushes off, and it's incomplete in the end zone! He pushed off, and the ball sails over his head in the end zone.
So the Seahawks survive and win 31-24 and move to 6-2-1 on the season and starting to strengthen their hold not only on the NFC West, but the number 2 seed in the NFC. That was quite a game, wasn't it, Russ?
Well, it was brilliant. I mean, I was slightly worried when their first drive, they just marched down the field with relative ease and scored a touchdown, but yeah, I was confident before the game. I said on our podcast last week, and I put on Facebook a few places, that we're going to win, and some people's lack of faith in the team in this game was slightly disturbing. But we've always played them close, and just look at the teams that Brady's beat since he's come back. They're hardly a murderer's row of top-level teams, and he's looked good, but we've always known this. Get a little bit of pressure on Brady, and he will make mistakes. And as shown with that, the inception to Sean Shedd, that he had Rubin chasing him down. He just lofted that ball up in the air.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, my thinking was how good they looked against most teams they faced with Brady in the driving seat for the last few weeks, and how Tyrod Taylor just diced us, and Robert Woods had 100,000 yards on Monday Night Football. Six days in the cross country, it wasn't a good recipe going in, but clearly worked.
I know, we were set up to fail by the league. I'm not a massive conspiracy theorist, but this one looked like we were set up to fail massively. But they didn't count on Cam Chancellor being there, did they?
No, well, I don't think we did for most of the week. Adam, it was quite something, wasn't it?
Brilliant. And speaking of the defensive side of things, I think watching that Buffalo game, although through slightly fireballed eyes, I think it's very hard to be a bend but don't break defense against a quarterback like Taylor, who, you know, if he can't see a throwing option, he'll run and he can throw on the run. I think at least with someone like Brady, that, and they almost found it with us as well, because Wilson, you know, is nearly healthy, but maybe not quite there. When you've got a quarterback that is willing to stand in the pocket and throw, it's slightly easier, I think, even how good the quarterback is, to play that sort of bend but don't break defense. And I think the number of field goals, number of red zone opportunities that both teams had that they didn't convert was indicative of that. And to be honest, you said that we survived, but actually against most of the teams, we probably would have scored 45 points because we could have been a bit more efficient in the red zone.
Were we 3 for 7, weren't we, in the red zone?
Yeah, in the red zone with a more built running back. If Thomas Rawls played that game on Sunday night, we'd have won by, as you say, 15 or 16 points. Because Prosise, well, as good as he was, he's not a goal line back and never will be, most likely. But yeah, it was, as you said, put it back, we can compare it to Taylor. The offense in New England is diverse, but it's diverse in a different way to what the Bills do. Because the Bills just ran all over the place, sideways, backwards, and then forwards, and all over. It was quite an offensive performance from that lot. But yeah, the defense certainly tuned it in. But yeah, focusing on a few players on offense. Obviously, we'll start with the quarterback. He killed everything they sent on him. As Doug Kyard of NESN wrote, on Sunday, when facing zone coverage, Russell Wilson went 12 for 17, 147, and a touchdown versus Mann, 13 for 20, 201, and two touchdowns. That is a top-tier performance, no matter how it shook up from Russ. And it's been coming, hasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, he was magnificent. It's amazing how someone's strength in their legs can transfer so much to an accuracy with their arms. But I guess the way a quarterback needs to throw, the mechanics all have to be right. And there were just some amazing touch throws, some absolute strikes. My favorite throw of the game, without question, was when he rolled out left and hit Tyler Lockett with an absolute bullet for a really big third down pickup, I think it was. I think at that point I was thinking, okay, we've got a quarterback back, and the season, we're exactly where we need to be to push on for the rest of the year now.
Yeah, Ross?
Yeah, he looked back to being Russell Wilson and doing Russell Wilson things, didn't he? I mean, there was one spin move where he spanned right into a defender, which wasn't great, but the rest of the time, the spin move wasn't quite as... it's almost there, but it's enough to throw defenders off. And I think even just the threat of Wilson being able to run is enough to keep defenses a little bit honest as well. They're not going to fully rush him. And the Patriots defense was slightly odd on occasions, just rushing two men as well.
Yeah, they were petrified of the deep ball, and they still got torched by a relatively few deep balls. Obviously, one Richardson where he had half of Foxborough to himself. Russell Wilson was a different gravy. I can't think of many regular season games where he's turned it on and torched a team of any standing or credibility like he did the Patriots defense on Sunday. That's Atlanta Falcons, Russell Wilson. That's final 4 minutes of the Green Bay game, Atlanta Falcons, although Brandon Bostic has an assist for that. But he was just on a different sphere, and other things we'll get into in a few seconds with other players on offense, everything just come together. But the heartbeat, the main focal point of everything that went right, was number three in Mr. Wilson. Another guy who's got a lot of praise, and as the aforementioned release of Christian Michael, CJ Prosise, worth the wait then, Adam?
He was brilliant. You're dead right about him maybe not being a goal line back, and he probably needs to add 10 to 15 pounds because there were times where he was getting absolutely licked, and I was a little bit worried he wasn't going to get up. Credit to him that he did, but if he's going to be that sort of, you know, he reminded me a little bit of David Johnson without quite the cutting ability, but if he's going to be a guy that can carry the ball on first and second down, he might have to add a little bit of bulk. But the ability to line up a guy like him in the slot on out wide, I mean, the routes he ran were brilliant, and he was just a joy to watch. That touch pass in the corner that reminded me a bit of Wilson to Baldwin over Champ Bailey in the Super Bowl was just a glorious, glorious play, and it was great to see.
It was everything about that was special. The fact he held on just added to it as well. Ross, Prosise?
Yeah, he looks electric, doesn't he? I think Doug Baldwin has this week compared him to, he reminds him of Arian Foster, which I think is a very good comparison, because he's bigger than your usual third down out the backfield backs. Like, he's taller, I think. He's a bit more shifty though, but I mean, he scored a touchdown as well, let's not forget that. The refs couldn't decide it was a touchdown, but it definitely was a touchdown.
It's almost like you had a bet on him to score a touchdown, Ross.
I wouldn't like to say. No.
No. But on Sunday, it was quite exciting to watch. 24 touches on Sunday, 153 all-purpose yards, 17 rush for 66, 7 receptions for 87. He led the team with both, which I think is the second time he's done it in 3 weeks. I think he might have done that in New Orleans. On the season, he's caught all 15 passes thrown his way for 203 yards, which is good, relatively so, anyway.
Just on him quickly, I think it's disrespectful to use the term third down back for him. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a third down back is almost the sort of afterthought guy that you give a screen pass to on third and 17 and hope he picks up 8 or, you know, is decent in pass protection. I don't really like the term third down back at all for any good player. And I think he can be so, so much more than that. I think he's a playmaker first and foremost. And someone that we're going to be really very, very, very happy to have in the years to come.
Yeah, I think the third down back was probably a term beat writers or coaches, whatever, used for him to like quell expectations for him. Because if he's just third back, down back, he gets, 15 snaps a game or whatever. He's not going to get many touches, so it quells. It doesn't leave fans disappointed if he craps the bed or whatever. But the fact he's shown in two and a half weeks what he can do on all three downs and four downs. Yeah, that tag is not... He deserves no part of that tag. He is a Swiss Army knife of an offensive player, and it's another Swiss Army knife to add. Because if you add him in a backfield with Rawls, you could even possibly put Lockett going across and everything. It's just absolute... Yes, it's going to be quite something to watch if Darrell Bevell can shake it up right and get things rolling. I'll swear
off. He has that Seahawks thing on running backs. He doesn't look to run out of bounds. He looks to hit the guy that's coming towards him.
No, which was
Beast does that. Rawls does that. Michael didn't do that.
No, which was... Well, Alex Collins might do that if he took it more than a yard. I mean, we don't know what Alex Collins could bring to the table. Elsewhere on offense, Doug Baldwin, 3 touchdowns and 6 catches. Didn't even go above 60 yards in a day. It's efficiency, apparently, like no one else has done at the wide receiver position for 2 years. Brandon Marshall was the last one, who had 3 touchdowns with just 48 receiving yards in 2014. He's so, so good. Angry Doug Baldwin is now being replaced by reliable Doug Baldwin. That 3rd TD pass, though, Adam, as you pointed out, looked familiar.
Yeah, it was just like the play in Philadelphia a couple of years ago, which, funnily enough, was another one of those games that I always think about Wilson just torching a defense. It's funny, you almost need to speak about Baldwin and Graham in tandem now, because at the moment what seems to happen is the two of them take away 3 defenders. And, you know, one of them will invariably be double-teamed. And Jimmy Graham's mere presence on the field, for me, had a big say in Baldwin getting 3 touchdowns. And on another day, it'll be Baldwin who gets double-teamed for the duration, and it'll be Graham that reaps the rewards. That is just a brilliant tandem. That if you just ignore tight end, wide receiver description as a duo, you can't really get much better than that.
No. Yeah, I think if you look around the league, there's a lot of teams who try and replicate that, and very few teams are having, well, maybe it's only been 1 week on Sunday, but against a very good team. No teams are getting a production. I think on Monday against the Bills, 10 days ago, Wilson was 14 for 14 throwing in Doug and Jimmy's direction, and he was 6 less, whatever, thrown to 15 and 16 and 10 and all the other lot. But when he throws to them two, it is just absolute money. But the 3rd touchdown also put Doug Baldwin tied with Odell Beckham Jr. and Allen Garbage Time Robinson with 19 touchdowns since the start of last season. Somehow, 89 is still under the radar, Ross.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, he did all his work in the end zone this week. Didn't even need him for the rest of the field. It's incredible. Yeah, like you say, Belichick works to take away the team's best offensive target. How do you do that if you've got two of them? I mean, that does unfortunately lead to 7 targets for Curse on the game, but he was unstoppable. That 3rd touchdown, he made contact with a defender and just breezed past him like he wasn't even there. And that Wilson to Baldwin connection is one of the best in the league.
Yeah, the 2nd touchdown pass at the end of the first half, there's a mic'd up clip apparently of Pete Carroll, and he's telling Russell Wilson to throw the ball away. obviously Russell Wilson doesn't go that way, and obviously the connection they've had in a few years, all the scramble drills, and he just finds a way to be wide open near the end zone and just easy does it. It's quite baffling when you put him with Odell Beckham. You put him in a sentence with Odell Beckham, Adam, and he's under the radar, he's still an applicable term, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, for me, Beckham is a dip by a distance the best at what he does. And you can't really compare the way the two of them play. But in terms of just a money receiver for us, Baldwin is just electric. And I dare say that probably since the start of the second half of last season to now, he's streets ahead of anyone else on number of touchdowns, because that's where the majority of it has come.
Is it because he's not so like flash as other receivers? Like he doesn't celebrate when he scores a touchdown. He'll have a hug, he'll shake a hand, then he'll walk off. He's not like Beckham does his dance, all that sort of stuff. That gets more media attention.
Yeah, but also media markets. Beckham's doing it in New York, and Doug Baldwin's doing it in as Matt Hasbeck used to call it, Southern Alaska. So, and Allen Robinson's doing it in Jacksonville when the team's 31-0 down. So no one really pays attention to that. Also on the offense, the offensive line. Pete Carroll saying yesterday that George Fant had zero missed assignments in his third start. It's quite impressive, but how big a part of the O-line was, how well they looked, was Jamie Collins now playing his trade in Ohio, Adam?
I was going to say, I mean, what we owe such a debt of gratitude to Belichick for wanting to can, in my opinion, one of the best linebackers in the league, because Dante Hightower was really destructive for a lot of the game, and you didn't want to get anywhere near him. And the reason you could avoid him is that there was no Jamie Collins coming from the other side to blow that side up. So, Christmas cards all round for Bill for that move, because it may have just won us a win.
Yeah. Russ?
Yeah, they didn't really bring much pressure, but what they did do, the offensive line held up really well. I was particularly impressed with, it's the same as it's always been all season, the middle three. They're just incredible when it comes to their blocking assignments. Occasionally during games, they'll have two or three highlight plays. But yeah, the tackles were solid as well. I mean, Wilson's been sacked 19 times through 10 games. That's his best career stats at this point.
Yeah, but 19 sacks doesn't tell the whole story, because he only gave up one sack against Arizona. He was hit every time he took a step in Arizona a few weeks ago. But the ceiling for this group is quite fun if you pull it out one by one, because obviously you've got Glowinski playing a new position in his second season. He's on his, 10th game. Justin Britt's in a new position. He's in his 10th game at that position ever. George Fant was playing basketball for 20 years of his life. Jermaine Ifedi has only played 4 or 5 games. Gary Gilliam's a tight end who's, it looks like, is clinging on to his job to a certain extent. Is there any chance that Gary Gilliam could go from being starting left tackle to starting right tackle to riding the bench on Sunday, Adam?
Well, Tom Cable said yesterday that the left tackle position is George Fant's, and Bradley Saul and Gary Gilliam will be fighting for the right tackle position. So I guess it's a bit like saying we'd rather have a cold or the flu at right tackle. I mean, God knows where Jamarcus Webb is. Is he a real human being? Because, you know, he's being paid a couple of million dollars to not do anything by the sounds of it. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, right tackle's where he was brought into play. So that's a strange one. I think Gilliam's the only one that's probably standout, struggling still. He had a couple of nice plays on Sunday, but he's probably the one that, if you're going to replace one, it would be in that position at this stage.
Yeah, I'd agree. But if Gary Gilliam loses two different jobs to Bradley Saul, it's not, doesn't say much for his NFL future, does it, Ross?
No, not at all. A man that was happily dumped by the Cardinals and a couple of other teams. I had really high hopes for Gilliam. I saw his off-season workout stuff and the amount of work he put into kind of getting in shape for the season. But yeah, he is the weak link now. I never thought, with George Fant starting the other side, that Gilliam would be the one that would be exposed as much. But yeah, I mean, on Ifedi, he just does his job, doesn't he? The best thing we can say about him is nothing at all, because he just does his job every week.
Yeah, he is slowly coming around. George Fant is probably on a similar tangent as well. I think Glowinski struggled on Sunday, to be quite honest. I do like him, but I think he struggled more. Justin Britt, that could be something to watch when Pro Bowl voting comes around next year if he carries on with this.
He's in a contract year as well, Justin Britt.
Yeah, which is always, I'm talking to a few Americans, some over there haven't forgiven Sean Alexander for the drop-off he had after paying the contract. Let's hope Britt doesn't suffer the same fate. You mentioned him earlier, Adam, Jimmy Graham. People are asking why we're not throwing to him in the red zone more, but it's quite hard when he's got four defenders on him, isn't it?
He had 70,000 defenders on him on Sunday. It was impossible to put him. I'm the biggest one for forcing him the ball, and I still would have done it. You know, maybe we were slightly light in how we used him, but he caught the big catches that we needed him to make. And yeah, as I say, I think you need to look at his and Baldwin's production as a partnership to establish whether they're playing well. That may sound a bit stupid, but yeah. I really do think they come as a complete pair. And yeah, judge them as a duo as opposed to individually going forward, and you'll probably be invariably very happy with what you're getting from both of them.
Yeah, Ross, I'll steal Adam's point he made to me a couple of days ago. Jimmy Graham is a playmaker in a different sense, isn't he? With all the coverage and attention he takes off everyone.
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, he's playing in quite a lot on the line for a tight end, but he's. As soon as he breaks away, that's it. The defence is always looking at him, which is going to leave someone else open.
And yeah.
There's always someone for us to go to, it seems.
There's a still of a player, I don't know when the play is, where they've got Lockett, Baldwin and probably Curse on the left-hand side and Jimmy Graham on the right on his own. And Jimmy Graham effectively has three defenders watching his movement and there's three receivers against three. That's cake from a baby for Russell Wilson at times. So that continues when we play a similarly decent, probably a better defense this week against the Eagles.
Yeah.
Even the third Baldwin touchdown, I mean, that safety is so terrified about Jimmy Graham. He gives Baldwin the freedom of Boston.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the fact we did that to Malcolm Butler as well is quite cool. Because he got a free trip to Disney, so on defensive side, there's only one man to start, really, isn't it? It's Cam Chancellor. we questioned not legitimacy of his injury, but we started to question his future here. That has probably been kiboshed on Sunday, isn't it, Ross?
God, yeah, egg all over our faces. He came back and he is the Seahawks. I talked about it a few weeks ago about Baldwin replacing Lynch as the emotion of this team. It's not, it's Cam. Cam is, he is in charge of this team on the field and he just sets the tone all the time. He just wasn't beaten and it's so nice to see Gronk being covered up. It's a shame they've also got Martellus Bennett who can do some things, but to keep Gronk to, what, three catches and 30 yards, no one else does that.
Yeah, but and also one half a long less as well for the game as well. But yeah, his importance can't be questioned really now, can it, Adam?
No, I mean, I don't expect him to be playing with an 8.25 million cap number next year. I think they'll maybe sort out an extension that maybe with signing bonuses and whatever they can. Spread that across a few more years. But he was brilliant. I genuinely. He didn't think he had a performance like that left in him. What will be the case to see is, you know, he needs now to stay healthy for the rest of the year. Because if he doesn't stay healthy, then it does become again a question of, is this a guy we can afford to pay all this money to if you can't rely on him to play? I think he's missed seven regular season games in the last, it'll be the last year, season and a half. And that is a little bit too much for a guy that wants big money. So let's get his health up to scratch again and we can evaluate. But yeah, I mean, incredible performance from a great player.
Yeah, and how Pete Carroll was talking about his injury as well for the few weeks before he came back, it seems like it's just like a putting up with the injury. It's not something that's going to need surgery or anything. It's just a case it's going to flare up from time to time. So how he deals with that. But when he's on the field, he said, that was something else. I mean, the play he makes at the end of the game on Blount to drag a 260-pound or heavy Blount is away from the goal line is just unbelievable. But yeah, I think these contracts, as you say, Adam, is something they probably revisit in the off-season. Someone else on defence who had one of the more impressive plays of the game as well with Frank Clark, the one-handed voice-like grip sack on Brady, which affected the game to a certain extent. it's just a case of using him more, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they rotate him when Bennett comes back. I mean, I don't really know probably enough about schemes and whatever, but could he be maybe used as that extra linebacker and coming off the edge like Irvin did?
Yeah, I'd be all for that. I think he has the upper body strength and the technique and everything to get past Irvin. He's not as, obviously, hasn't been asked to do it, but Irvin improved in pass coverage the more he was here. So that'd be something which could be interesting to see how, if they're using that with Averill and Bennett causing havoc and Jerron Reed throwing players back into quarterbacks like he did on Sunday. It's quite a fearsome front seven. Frank Clark, Ross?
He's a beast, isn't he? I mean, that sack you talk about, Nate Solder had him, and he was blocking him fairly well, but he just completely overpowered him. And, yeah, fingertips, pulls Brady down by his jersey, and Brady's the master of just taking that extra step just to get away from the pressure. Couldn't do it. 10.5 sacks in his career in 1.5 seasons, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but if you're Nate Solder after that play, you can't really take any criticism because you blocked
man. Did your job.
Just he has ridiculously long arms and a ridiculously tight grip. I mean,
yeah,
I wouldn't like to shake his hand anyway. But
the look on Brady's face is so funny because he thinks, I've got away with this, and he thinks, hang on, I've been pulled back or something.
yeah, all that defensive showing, although it was, as Adam said, a bit of a bend up break, all that was out 72, who appears to be hoping to be back to play his old team, Tampa Bay, at Raymond James Stadium in 10 days or so. Now for some gaudy stats on that game on Sunday. Russell Wilson now leads all time for yards per attempt and QB passer rating on the road. The last two games, as he's neared 100% in health, Russ has gone 45 of 63, 630 yards, 5 touchdowns, a yards per attempt of 10, and a rushing touchdown too. Sunday was the first time since 2007 that Brady had 0 touchdowns and 1 interception at home. That year was the one where he went all Madden, Michael Vick on Madden on us, and threw all the touchdowns in the world to Randy Moss. Under Belichick, the Patriots were 102-1 when having a fourth quarter lead at home. Before Sunday, they're now 102-2. Also, that two-point call, what were your thoughts on the going for two, Ross?
I understand why Pete did it. He wanted to fully bury them, make it a nine-point lead. That's almost insurmountable in the time they had left, but I don't think I would have been brave enough to call that if I was a head coach.
Adam?
I don't love it. I didn't love it at the time, but I see the logic in it because we all basically figured that they were going to score a touchdown either way, and so you might as well make it as hard for them as they possibly could. It would have been interesting to see if they may have gone for two with a seven-point lead, because they may have thought, well, we're at the one-yard line, we may as well try and punch it in now instead of risking overtime. That would have been very interesting to see what had happened. But, yeah, it's tricky. Let's not forget that these 1 points are no longer automatic. So it's not like the old days where it's a simple chip shot. We missed one on Sunday as it is, so maybe not the worst call in the world.
Yeah, I was all for going for it, but the fact that Belichick was going for running the clock down and everything like that, they probably would have gone for two. So it would have looked a bit stupid if we'd have kicked it and then they'd have won by a point or whatever happened. It was the first time though a coach in the fourth quarter, according to Football Outsiders, had gone for two while up 7, which is just proves that they really do have a record for everything in American sports. That was a fun one for the neutral, especially. It was quite a fun NFL Sunday, all told, with all the close games. Anyone else we failed to mention or praise, guys? Adam, Ross,
great to see Tyler Lockett back fully healthy. He does make a real difference on the offense when he can take the top of a defense.
Yeah, most definitely. As also with Doug Baldwin and Curse to a certain extent, being open underneath and Procise. There's the play where Procise runs over the guy. The route he runs to get open is so smooth. It's can't wait to watch how this kid improves and goes about the rest of the season. Now onto a new feature. Currently called That's Annoying. We will each give a topic we find in the NFL or Seahawks land we find annoying and discuss. Probably need a new title because it's annoying me, the title. Russ, you go first.
Okay, mine's a kind of a league-wide thing, and it's mainly on podcasts, talking about which quarterbacks are elite. Who cares? It doesn't matter who's elite, it's just who's playing well. And I'm fed up of hearing, is Eli still elite or is Joe Flacco elite? Those aren't discussions that are relevant to anything anymore. Same with Wilson. Is he a top one or top five, top 10 running back, quarterback? Who cares? He's really good, and I love watching him play. It doesn't matter where he ranks. He's just really, really good at football.
I prefer the top five, top three, top 10 stuff than elite. I think elite is the worst word ever attached to anything. It's just because it's all but opinion. It doesn't really, it's someone's opinion. But as people say, you can't spell elite without Eli. So, so there is that. Adam,
they need to figure out a new way to spell that. Then, don't they?
Yeah. Adam, elite quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't care less. I quite enjoy the QB rankings that people do. I find that fairly interesting to see how people, you know, compare and contrast and how they evaluate quarterbacks. But in the same way as, you know, when we discuss in our football, is X player world class? Well, unless you're going to evaluate what world class actually means, how the hell am I going to know?
yeah, exactly. It is all conjecture, is that the right word? And all opinion stuff. Adam, what annoys you?
The Dallas Cowboys annoy me.
Wait. Yeah, how long we got?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are plenty of things that annoy me, let's be honest about that. But the Dallas Cowboys in particularly, their last second win in Pittsburgh is just a little bit annoying. It's a time where they are fortunate to have, a good roster that is now pretty healthy, and they have just the most disgusting schedule for the rest of the year. There's barely a team in it that's worthy of NFL status, unfortunately. That said, if you offered me the NFC Championship game in Dallas, I would take it, but I'd much rather have the playoffs running through Seattle as they have done to such success in two of the last 3 years.
I'd agree. I really agree. The Cowboys, when they're good, they're all over the place, all over networks and websites, and Jerry Jones is being talked about. But when they're 2-14, they're still being talked about every day by Colin Cowherd and Skip Baylesses of the world. They are annoying no matter what they do. Russ?
Yeah, Cowboys? I mean, for me, the entire NFC East is just incredibly annoying. But, yeah, it's Cowboys, the America's team. It's a lovely story, two rookie superstars in the making. But, yeah, like Adam said, let's get them in the playoffs, and I'd rather have the wizened old veteran of Russell Wilson and players like that rather than the rookie quarterback in the bright lights of a playoff game.
Yeah, on the Cowboys, a fair play to Romo for standing up, because now he's in a no-lose situation, because if Prescott shits the bed for the next month, I'll take over, it doesn't matter. Had all these stunts, now he can just walk back into the room, yeah, and his legacy is cemented. For me, as same with Adam, really, he's quite a bit annoying me this week. I'm going to go with Jeff Fisher and Les Snead. Why have you changed your quarterback at this juncture? If you don't have faith in a guy you give up the world to get when you play the Jets, or when you played all the soft teams that have played the last few weeks, when you actually have a chance, have you have enough room for manoeuvre to get back into the playoff hunt and all the rest of it, you don't give the quarterback 6-7 games to get back in. The rookie quarterback with a running back who's struggling, and the O-line who can't run block anyone or pass block anyone, the kid is going to suffer and you're just going to be in a mess, which is not annoying, it's funny. But don't get all high and mighty. Let's just stop it. And Sky, why have you changed the game? Who wants to watch the Rams versus the Dolphins on Sky Sports? Come on. But yeah. Adam?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously Jeff Fisher will be buzzing off the back of winning a punter as Special Team Player of the Week. I mean, that is really his his raison d'etre in the NFL these days. I mean, an 80-yard punt for him, I mean, that's wet dream worthy for Fisher, let's be honest. But I actually think he's been quite clever here in looking after number one, because If Goff is good, then he can turn around and say, you see, I waited the right amount of time. I got him ready. And, yeah, he's great. And if he's bad, he can turn around and say, well, you know, all the media pressure, all the pressure from the fans. Mm. I didn't want to put him in. I was trusting in Case Keenum, but I didn't have any choice. So in a man that, well, with a guy that basically only really cares about keeping his own job by the sound of it and not really about winning football games, I think it's a good move.
Yeah, so basically you just took your stance on Jermaine Curse then, yeah? Ross?
Yeah, it's incredibly annoying. The Sky factor more than anything, because I was looking forward to watching the game without having to sign up for another free trial of Game Pass this weekend. But yeah, I mean, he's feeding him to Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake and Mario Williams if he can be bothered to play. It's not an easy debut for him. Then they're running the Saints, the Patriots, the Falcons, the Seahawks, and then the Niners, fair enough, but then the Cardinals as well. That's not the easiest of run-ins. He could be massively setting them up to fail here, and they're still three games out from their usual 7-9 win. I can't see them winning three more games. They might go 4-12 this year, boys.
That'd be hilarious, but they're not about that 7-9
catfish.
But yeah, if you want to get involved as ever, we are happy to have you do so. Don't be as shy as you appear to be and get involved. You may also may need a new name, as my commitment to this one is quite low and it possibly is quite bad. So record yourself and fire it over to one of us and we'll discuss and either shut it down like Adam shut mine down, or we'll agree heavily with it. Moving on. Week 11 starts later tonight in the NFL with the Saints looking to close the book on Carolina's 2016 season on what could be a high-scoring Thursday nighter. If you're listening to this on Friday morning, what a game that was. 51-48 it was, I think. Then it kicks up a gear on Sunday with a now-removed-off Sky game versus the Eagles. The Eagles are 5-4 and bottom of the Eat Your South NFC East. The season's feasibly on the line for them this Sunday. For Seattle, we are looking to get Luke Wilson back, and obviously it appears Thomas Rawls is going to be back on the field again. But as in the opposition, what are we going against here, Ross?
This is a tricky one, because the Eagles, they've not been massively impressive in recent weeks, but they've also not been terrible. They've played some really good games, and they have a really good defence, I think, a really underrated defence. But Carson Wentz has turned into a little bit of a turnover machine the last couple of weeks. It's going to be a really interesting game, I think. I think if we can get an early lead and kind of, with Rawls and Procise, kind of run some clock, we should be able to win this quite easily.
Yeah, I think it helps that they're flying over country to Seattle. Yeah. Adam, what the Eagles offer us?
Well, they offer a really good defence. We can't sleep on that. They're... was it Baldwin? I think it was Baldwin that said that in sort of past defense, they represent maybe the best team we've played so far this season, like twice as good as Arizona or something. It may not have been Baldwin, but someone of repute said something like that. So it's not going to be easy. They've got a serious front four that could cause our offensive line some problems. But I think overall, if we look after the ball well, play the field position game well, we should put ourselves in a good enough position to win it fairly comfortably.
Yeah, so Carson Wentz, he's the most impressive rookie quarterback for a couple of years, isn't he? Probably Derek Carr since?
I think he certainly started off that way, but I'm not convinced he's continued in such fine fettle. I think he's got 7 fumbles on the year. We know he likes to take contact, so maybe there's a chance we can give him a couple of licks. But I think he certainly looks, and he has the physique and even the mystique of what you want a quarterback, especially someone playing in cold weather outdoors, to be. And I think he is going to be a very good player. But I certainly think that there are signs of a rookie in him now that weren't there in the first few weeks of the season.
Yeah, Ross?
Yeah, definitely. In November, he hasn't thrown a touchdown yet, and he's thrown 2 picks. Overall, he's 9 touchdowns to 5 interceptions and 8 fumbles. His QBR rating is under 50, which is not very good at all. I like him, though. I think he's a playmaker. The only problem is, what weapons has he got to outside of Darren Sproles? Their receiving core is appalling. and their running backs, they can't seem to decide whether they want to run with Matthews or Sproles.
Yeah, which is really annoying for my fantasy team, by the way. So if you tell me if Ryan Matthews is starting this week, I'd really appreciate it. Carson Wentz was really impressive. We've got off to a rapid, rapid start. It has kind of fouled back a little bit, but he played quite well against the Cowboys, although a little bit safe against the Cowboys a few weeks ago, where I think his yards per attempt are somewhat stupid, like 4 or something like that. So it's quite safe, but he is really impressive. The Eagles have got a good one, and I mean, you look at what we just mentioned with Jared Goff and all that nonsense, what they gave up for to get their franchise quarterback, another phrase I don't like, I don't know why I just used it. Yeah, they made a smart decision as the roster choice to rebuild around them after Chip Kelly left it in a certain state of disarray. You just mentioned the run game. It is a similar state as the Seahawks, isn't it? They've got 3 different running backs who do 3 different things, Adam.
Yeah, we have to watch them. I mean, Sproles is always a little sneaky bastard that's difficult to stop. thankfully, you know, they haven't got a LeGarrette Blount and they haven't really got a McCoy. They've sort of got guys that are in between those two types of players. Sproles aside, but he's not going to take it on first and second down too often. So hopefully we can set a nice edge and bottle them up well. Stop that quite well. I mean, the advantage that we've got is that they've not really got anyone that can go deep against us. Jordan Matthews is decent, but they lack a real, you know, speedster that they might be able to hit with a deep bomb.
Well, they cut that guy a couple of weeks ago when he got done for the weapon and drug charges, wasn't it?
Josh Huff.
So that's Jamie Collins-esque move, probably. the run game, Ross. Diverse.
Yeah, it's not massive. Similar. Not massively impressive, is it? Really? I mean, Ryan Matthews has got 4 yards shy of 400 this year. Sproles has got 304. Sproles is averaging 5 yards a run, which is very good for a running back of his style. But yeah, they don't seem to know what kind of team they want to be on offense, I think, and that's fair. First year quarterback, first year head coach, just figuring it out, I suppose.
They are going to probably rely heavily on the run game early to let Wentz get his legs and get his head in order in that cacophony of noise. As Adam mentioned about their defense, the biggest thing for me on Sunday is their D-line against their O-line. Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, you've got Connor Barwin. They are absolute beasts and maulers at the front. Brandon Graham's having a year like he probably has ever at any level of football. They are quite good up front, and then they've got some playmakers and Malcolm Jenkins in the backfield, didn't they, Ross?
Yeah, they're not to be taken lightly at all. They're third in points allowed this year, which is very good. Just giving up 17.2 more than we are. So it's going to be an interesting game, really. It's definitely down to which offense can get the ball moving more than a lot of other games we've had this year.
Yeah, Adam, the D-line, playmakers on the back end?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be probably where the game is won and lost. If we can hold a steady offensive line, then I feel fairly comfortable with our chances. If they're getting guys in the backfield all day and Wilson's having to scramble and, you know, turning out of sacks, unless we can really do incredibly well on the scramble drill, I think we're going to find it a tricky game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a game where you just have to outlast them to a certain point. But yeah, there could be a good one. If the defensive carryover the Sunday finish to this week, might be a long night for Eagles fans. One to watch for the Seahawks on offense, Adam?
Ooh, that is a good one. Well, let's go back with the returning rules. Certainly one to watch. Watch out for him to see what his condition's like. And I, for one, am very excited to see him back, because I'm fairly confident that after he was rushed back for the summer, they won't make the same mistake twice.
Yeah, I'd agree. Ross?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Procise again. It's obvious to go for Baldwin or Graham, but yeah, Procise, he just makes things happen and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, for me, it's another guy returned from injury. It's Luke Wilson. Before he got injured, he was being used as a halfback, fullback, tight end type deal. And with all the pass rush they can throw at us from all different angles. We've obviously got Michael Kendricks, I think, is still loitering in their linebacker core as well. Him as an extra blocker coming from the fullback position will be interesting to see how they helped, obviously, George Fant in particular, but Gary Gilliam as well, both sides of the ball. So, and seeing if he can catch some passes and see if Vinette gets any more opportunities. But Luke Wilson is the one for me. On offence, Ross, defence?
It's got to be Frank Clark again. I mean, he's benefiting from the season that Cliff Averill's having. 7.5 sacks is very good from a second-year defensive end. And he is Michael Bennett light for me at the minute. He can play inside, he can play outside, and he's got that ball rush move. But, yeah, I mean, just the whole defensive line, but Frank Clark in particular.
Adam?
I'm going to go with Wagner because I think he might be used as, just to really shut down that run game. And if he can do that as he normally does, then I think we'll be fine.
For me, it's Demontre Moore. He's been quite impressive. The limited snaps he saw the first two games, he really did flash quite a bit against the Bills, especially in the first half. And if he continues on that, they might have a quite a little nice little bonus on that.
He's in the backfield an awful lot, isn't he?
He is. But on that depth chart next year, they're heading into the draft, is something we'll get onto in a sec with a question we had in. I think if Demontre Moore continues to flash, even in limited snaps he's got, I don't know how many he had on Sunday, but if he continues to show up, there could be some interesting decisions to make up front. Not saying they're going to cut an Averill or a Bennett, but having him on the depth alongside Frank Clark and then all guys in the middle, it could leave a certain Cassius Marsh on the outside looking in. So,
no. Yeah,
Demontre Moore is someone I'm going to be keying in on. Score predictions, Adam?
Let's go with 27-14 Seattle.
Okay, Ross?
24-17 Seattle win.
30-16 I think is what I've gone for. Yeah, so 7-2-1. Hopefully the Cowboys mess it all up whoever they're against this week, and that quest to have home field all playoff long, as home playoff games are quite nice. Move a step closer. Now for some more true and false. Russ?
I've backed the Browns every week this season. I've paid for that. The Browns, true or false, the Browns are going to finish 0-16 this year.
False, because... false because I don't want it to happen. I want them to win a game because I think they've got enough good players to win a game on that team. I thought they'd win last week. I thought the Ravens were terrible against the Steelers, but for some reason he decided to bench the okay looking Cody Kessler for the turnover machine that was Josh McCown at halftime. It just completely jettisoned that game. So out of hope more than expectation, I hope it's false.
They've got Steelers, Giants, Bengals, Bills, Chargers, and Steelers left to play.
Yeah, they're winning the game there. The Philip Rivers in the second half on Sunday was
four
awful.
Picks in the fourth quarter.
Awful. Absolutely. Oh, it's terrible. Adam, Browns, 0-16?
I mean, by the law of averages, you'd think they'd have to win a game. But ultimately, why would they necessarily want to win a game towards the back end of the year? So I'm going to hedge my bets and say true, because they are just so bad and so cursed. However, I do think they'll win six games or more next season, which is my very gutsy prediction for next season.
It's gutsy prediction. So, Adam, true or false?
My one, Detroit Lions will win the NFC North.
I said this 3 weeks ago. Well, to a certain extent, I said that was true. They're just, I mean, that final 4 minutes of the Minnesota game 2 weeks ago was incredible. Golden Tate finishing an overtime game like that is just golden, most Golden Tate thing ever. They're going to win the North. The Packers are a mess. Rodgers hates McCarthy. So, yeah, true. Ross?
I don't know what's going on in this division. Chicago, obviously, they're massively out of it. Green Bay conceded 47 points to the Titans. The Titans Sorry, Dave, I know you listen to this, but it's the Titans. Minnesota can't get a win from anywhere, and I think the Lions just win this by default. Yeah, I think you're true.
So on the flip side of that, do you know that the Lions are 0-9 going into the last minute of every game this season?
That's ridiculous.
They've won every game on the last drive of the game.
Is Matt Stafford trying to get a better comebacks record than Russell Wilson is?
It's ridiculous. I don't know what they are. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. There's so few good teams in the... I don't know. It's crazy league. And speaking of the Titans, if you want a second true or false, the Titans win the AFC South.
True.
False. That defense is bad. That defense is bad. But talking of the Titans, that is my true or false. It's kind of be elite. I kind of guess I dispelled all that. Marcus Mariota is the next ascending quarterback in the league. He's the one that people are going to be talking about. Like they're talking about Derek Carr now, Marcus Mariota is going to be that in 12 months' time.
Yeah, I'm going to go true on that one. I think, I mean, this last month he's been incredible. I traded him away in fantasy, but I traded him away for Thomas Rawls, so I'm fairly happy with that decision. But, yeah, I think if he can continue his growth, he's definitely the better of those two first-round quarterbacks picked last year.
Yeah, Winston's more fun, but Mariota's better.
yeah, Winston is fun.
Adam?
I'll go with true again. I think there were doubts coming out of college whether he would survive in an NFL-style system. And a few people on Twitter made a point of showing him under center, taking a five-step drop and making a beautiful touch pass. I think it might have been for Kendall Wright's touchdown or maybe Rashad Matthews' touchdown on Sunday. He's developing. He's a smart guy. He seems like a really good guy, actually, which is makes a change for an Oregonite. but yeah, I think he's going to be a top player. To quote Harry Redknapp when he discussed the NFL, and yeah, absolutely true for me. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, as you said, they put 47 points on the Packers. Marcus Mariota is throwing the ball to Rashad Matthews, Tajay Sharp, Delanie Walker, Kendall Wright, and is Harry Douglas his other guy?
Yeah.
And he's getting 40. Yeah, the Packers defense absolutely wilted, but the guy's doing it with absolutely nothing. If you give him a proper weapon, which I thought they did when they drafted DGB last year, but they got rid of him sharpish. Yeah, he's an ascending dude. Anything else in the NFL catch your eye, gents?
Amazing play to end the New Orleans Denver game. I don't know how Denver keep grinding out these games. I'm not sure they've won a game in a proper method since about 1996. every game they win seems to be either a defensive touchdown or, I mean, a special teams block that you, I didn't even know you were allowed to run it back and you got 2 points. So it's crazy. I mean, I think people are being a little bit over the top in saying that the referees gave Denver the win because Denver would obviously have got the ball back level score anyway with just the block. So, yeah, that was a crazy ending. And I think just that half an hour of football was completely nuts.
Yeah, but also the thing on that return, imagine if that was Richard Sherman. Imagine we'd still be hearing Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino on NFL Network talking about how it should have gone the other way. But yeah, anyway. But they're not because it's the Denver Broncos and they're winning for the second season running, as you say, in spite of their quarterback. They won the Super Bowl pretty much in spite of their quarterback, and they're probably not going to win the Super Bowl this year. But they're winning games and staying in touch with the Chiefs and the Raiders in spite of how poor their quarterback is. Both of them. Ross, anything for you?
Yeah, I mentioned the elite discussion earlier. The other end of that spectrum is Blake Bortles, the worst starting quarterback in the league.
No, Brock Osweiler is.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, true, 99 yards is terrible, but he's not throwing picks every single game. Pick sixes as well every single game.
No, but just go and watch one of those interceptions. He throws the ball away at TJ Yeldon's foot and it pops up in the air to a defensive player. Yeah, Brock Osweiler is the worst quarterback in the league.
But okay, I'll re-ask that question. Is Blake Bortles the best garbage time quarterback in the league?
Yeah, he's amazing. There's a guy who's in my Adams Fantasy League. He's got Bortles and Alan Robinson for a few weeks, I told him to call his team the Garbage Timers. That's all. The only time he gets points in fantasy is when it's the Garbage Time. But Bortles is bad, but that interception, it's like a glitch on Madden. It's just, it's unfair to a certain extent. Ross, a few member questions?
Yes, I wanted to get to one from Dave Bailey. It says, looking to the future, do you think the next Seahawks head coach is already on the staff?
No, I don't. I think he's in the city. I don't think he's on the staff.
Is that a college football reference? Because that's helped me out.
It is, yeah. I think if Pete Carroll can last 4 or 5 more years, Adam, is that?
I think Carroll will survive as long as Wilson survives. I think the guy is, I don't know what vitamins he takes in the morning, but I can see Carroll wanting to stick it out for as long as Wilson does. I think they've got a great thing going, and I don't think either of them would be as effective without the other.
No, but if he does walk away, if I was Paul Allen, I would drive the 4, 5, 6 miles, 10 miles up to Montlake and open the checkbook to Chris Peterson and give him whatever he wants and tell him to give him not as much control as Carroll had, because he's never been in the NFL before, but he's an unbelievable coach and it would be quite a lot of fun to see him in the NFL. Adam, Ross, what do you think?
Well, I know nothing of college football, but it's always been talked about that what's his face? Tom Cable will be is the head coach in waiting. I don't know. I'm going to go with your guys' better knowledge here and say, yeah, let's go for the Huskies coach.
Adam, Chris Peterson, NFL. Do you think it would work? Do you think, not in Seattle, I mean in general NFL. He's an NFL coach in waiting, isn't he?
Yeah, he seems to be. He seems to have a sort of a mantra and a method of working that would transcend from college kids to adults. But you never know. I mean, look, there's so many coordinators out there. Shanahan's being linked with Joel. It's so difficult to know who is head coach worthy. But Chris Peterson certainly seems like a guy, if he wants to, that could make the jump to the NFL. I think he might be very happy in college football for the rest of his days. But let's see.
Yeah, because he's making, I mean, I don't know what the new... He just saw a new 10-year extension, which will take him up to age 66. And he's already making... Yeah, he's already making $3 million a year, and it's going to be paying him more. So he is pretty well set, but I would quite like him to be the next coach. Also, talking about coaches in Seattle, can we not bring Gus Bradley back, by the way? Because if you're not going to trust Christian Michael because of bad juju and all that stuff, all the negative stuff, imagine what 4 or 5 years in Jacksonville has done to Gus Bradley. That is going to be a lot of mental scarring to get over. So anyway. Any other questions, Ross?
Yeah, there's one from Gordon Wright. Given the recent improved form, where do we draft? And we're not allowed to say the O-line. I liked your response on Facebook. We're drafting 32nd, obviously. But what position group do we go for?
Adam?
Well, I live in London, you two don't, and the heavens at the answering of that question have just utterly opened and are now dumping it down. So I think even God himself is telling us that we must draft an offensive lineman with the first round pick. But if not, I think it's probably going to be between a defensive end and a running back, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd probably say defensive end as well, just shore up that you've got your future in Clark one end, just get another one for the other end.
Yeah, although with Frank Clark, I think they may see him as more of an inside guy like Mike Bennett more than Cliff Averill. I think defensive end would be a consideration with Averill's contract. Is it 2018? His contract's up?
Yeah,
and he's nearing 30, and Pete Carroll seems averse to coaching 30-year-olds, so it could be something to watch. But I think it'd be O-line or running back. As I keep saying every week, running back this class is quite impressive. I keep circling back to the guy who did the first draft in Seahawks, either Royce Freeman. It appears that the Huskies broke him about 6 weeks ago because he hasn't done much of anything since. But yeah, I think he's the guy, if we do draft late first, when we inevitably trade back to 50 or whatever, I'll be quite happy if he's the guy we pick up. Any other questions?
I'd like to welcome Chris Balding. Thoughts on the likelihood of Seahawks playing the Jags in the UK next season?
As Chris said, I think Chris said on the podcast last week, if it doesn't happen next year against the Jags, it probably never will.
Yeah.
So I think Kirkwood said a few weeks ago, wait till Thanksgiving. That's when more things will come out. So we've got, what, a week to wait. So I wouldn't be surprised, but if it's not, I think that ship may well sail if we don't play the Jags next year. Adam?
I think the only, well, the chance of it would be, I think we play the NFC East as a division next year as well.
Yeah,
so
we're
I guess if it was going to happen, we'd be playing, yeah, in New York. I guess they'd probably want to do the Giants game, then a London game, then a bye. I think the team would probably be moderately happy with that. But yeah, I think it's going to be Jacksonville or nothing. And let's hope for all of the fans over here that we do get it, because it would be an amazing weekend.
Yeah, completely, completely agree. It would be an amazing week, I think. I mean, obviously, the travel plans considering. But yeah, anyway, some good games on dock for week 11. We will be back next week, possibly with a very, very cool guest joining us to preview the week 12 game in Tampa against Jameis Winston, Mike Evans and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Massive thanks to everyone who listened, has joined in, however you have so far. Really appreciated. As ever, if anyone wants to continue to join in or donate or whatever they want to do to help us out, where and how and why can they do that, Ross?
Well, why? Because we're awesome and you should do. But where? ThePedestrianPodcast.podbean.com is where you can get the podcast if you don't like iTunes. While you're there, there's a donate button. Any donations we get are greatly received, and we're also working on a few little thank you, not prizes, but little gifts for anyone that does donate. We're going to give you something back as well, besides the podcast. We're on iTunes, The Pedestrian Podcast. Just leave us a 5-star rate and review while you're there, and we'll read them out on the show. And Twitter is UK Seahawkers? Seahawkers UK?
Seahawkers UK.
That's the one. I can never remember that.
Yeah, Seahawkers UK. I'm at Stu _ Core. Adam is Adam D. Nathan.
That's the one.
And Ross is Ross Bell 1984.
There you go.
Yeah, and if you want also some extra listening, go on iTunes, look for The Honked, go 64 minutes in and listen to Dave Softy Mahler ban Mr. Nathan from Husky Stadium after he went 0-3 on Saturday evening. It is quite good. Cause...
We'll try and lift the clip for you if we can, because it is quite funny.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, that's all we have for this week. Please continue to start to get involved, guys. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast, and Ross...
Go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.
Don't invite your friends from England anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you. And by the way, John, I've already sent Adam a text about that, telling him he's banned for life from Husky Stadium, buddy. Right. I've taken care of that, John. Okay. I got a buddy of mine who's in town from London. He's been to three Husky games, and they've lost every single one.
I told him to get the hell out when I saw him.
Yeah, he's gone. He's done. He won't come within 500 yards of Husky Stadium. All right, final thoughts, Coach.